This is Ethan, and I'm here with Dave, and together we are Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast, episode 224-inch.
On this episode, we interview the legendary comedian, known for his work on Saturday Night Live, and for being the man literally behind Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, the amazing Robert Smigel.
It's Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast.
It's a podcast about Weird Al.
It's Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast.
Seriously, the whole podcast is about Weird Al.
It's Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast.
You don't have to listen, but we're glad you are.
Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast.
This is Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, and you're listening to Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast. You know, I used to be a huge fan of Weird Al, and you know what happened? I turned 6.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, Dave!
At top of the morning to ye.
And to you and yours. So I know you usually go all out, but how did you celebrate St. Patrick's Day this year?
Well, you won't believe this, but I ate green eggs and ham.
So you're saying you forgot it was St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Well, I suppose it's time for What's Happening in Weird Al Related News!
Triumph the Insult Comic Dog's new special, recorded live at San Francisco Sketchfest 2024, was just released yesterday, Tuesday, March 19th, on YouTube.
This latest edition of Let's Make a Poop features past guest of the podcast Dave Hill, imminent guest of the podcast Robert Smigel, and, oh yeah, Weird Al's on it too!
And our very own Ethan Allman was in attendance at the taping. All right, Ethan, what can you tell us about being there in person?
I ate a poop sandwich.
Ew! Okay, you know what? On second thought, let's just ask Robert Smigel about the event in a few minutes.
John Bermuda Schwartz has started his preparations for Weird Al's next tour, but not in the way you might expect.
You're right. I might be thinking he'd be waxing his sticks or polishing his cymbals or lathering his foot pedals.
Right, none of that. In addition to being Weird Al's longest-running band member and archivist and historian and drummer, he's also in charge of the playlist you hear in the venue before and after the Weird Al performance.
Bermuda has gone to Facebook to help crowdsource ideas for some newer, upbeat songs that would fit in the mix, but he stipulates that he's not looking for quirky or funny material.
Well, there goes all of my ideas, Dave! Oh well.
Now, while we'd much rather know when the tour is happening, it is nice to have any and all confirmation that there will be a next tour.
It just came to our attention that past guest of the podcast and Weird Al's longtime touring merchandise coordinator, Marnie Farlow, was named Venue Merchandiser of the Year 2023 by Live Nation.
From all of us here at Dave and Ethan's 2008 Weird Al podcast, a huge congratulations to Marnie.
This episode is brought to you in part by Vegan Burrito Restaurant, Burrito Burrito, home of the 2-pound double-wrapped and quesadilla Burrito Burrito, and Wizard Burger in Albany, New York. Come on down to Burrito Burrito and Burrito Burrito your Burrito Burrito and Wizard Burger for mouth-watering, loaded, dare I say, beefy vegan burgers. From Albany to Uranus, Burrito Burrito and Wizard Burger feed the hungry with out-of-this-world plant-based real food, always vegan style. Visit BurritoSquared.com and WizardBurger.com to order ahead.
Okay, let's check out what's happening in Grammy Award-winning Jim Kimmel West-related news.
Jim Kimmel West's monthly newsletter was full of great news about upcoming music and projects.
He has 3 albums in the works due out in 2024, including a new album with Josh Jaffe, a live Slackers in Paradise album with Ken Emerson, and a duet album with Muriel Anderson.
And releasing soon is a collaboration with producer Vito Grigoli, as well as a song co-written with Alan Thomas and Ed Haker.
In addition to upcoming dates in California, Kimmel also has dates in Florida, Colorado, and Seattle on the slate for 2024 over at jimkimmelwest.com.
And now it's time for What's Happening in Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast-related news!
Exclusive videos from the lens of our very own Ethan Allman have continued to drop exclusively for Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast Patreon supporters, with the most recent one dropping last week.
We're working on something special for our Patreon supporters to help celebrate the 5-year anniversary of our podcast. So join the family at patreon.com/2000inch so you can be one of the very first to hear.
And now it's time for our very timely interview. All right, Ethan, take it away.
Dave and I are absolutely thrilled to welcome to the podcast. He is the creator of Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. You've heard him and seen him on SNL, and he also just happens to have a brand new special that just dropped featuring Weird Al. Please welcome to the podcast, Robert Smigel. How's it going, Robert?
Thank you. Everything's going great.
We are so excited to chat with you. There's a lot to cover.
Sure.
You just had this brand new special drop, and I actually got to be in person in the audience for it. And so I can say firsthand, it was pretty stinking majestic. I loved it.
Stinking majestic. I'm going to use that.
Very apropos.
That's a pull quote if I ever heard one. Especially for Triumph. Anything with stinking as the adjective plays for me. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm glad you had a good time. It was maybe the most fun show I've done in 20 years, honestly.
Oh my God. It was obviously I'm a huge fan of Triumph, but I'm also a huge fan of Weird Al. So seeing both of you together and getting to eat a poop sandwich, I mean, the night couldn't get any better.
It was a poop sandwich. I mean, if you add Michael Winslow and Rob Schneider, it was a quadruple decker.
And once the cameras went off, once the show ended, I had the distinct pleasure of being in a karaoke bar with you and a couple of the guys.
Right.
And I not only got to see you perform some karaoke, you got to see me do Amish Paradise.
I did. I saw Amish Paradise. I was the one applauding. No, it was a San Francisco karaoke bar, and a lot of people were bewildered by your choice and perhaps disappointed that you weren't singing the straight Coolio version,
right,
or even the original Stevie Wonder version. They were not necessarily hip to the Amish Paradise, even though it's one of Al's. It might be Al's biggest hit. I'm not sure.
Probably after Eat It, yeah.
After Eat It, I would say.
And White and Nerdy, of course, too. Yep.
It was pretty surreal to be in this little karaoke bar where there were some of the most legendary comedy people of all time. And then on the other side, just, two dozen people who were completely clueless as to who was there.
Clueless. Had no idea who any of us were. Dave Hill was there, a really funny comedian and musician. I believe he sang Rihanna's hit. No. It was Beyonce's hit, the one about Irreplaceable.
Oh,
he sang Irreplaceable.
Yeah.
And I sang a song that I don't think has ever been sung in that room.
What was that song?
The Lonely Goat Herd from The Sound of Music. I saw it. There's this like literally like 1,000-page book of, and I was just like whirling through it. Like, what can I find? And there it was, The Lonely Goat Herd. And I just had to do it.
It was incredible,
too. To do it. Well, me and you were the two who enjoyed each other. And yeah. No, they were really, I think they were angrier at mine than they were at yours. Because I did it in a thick Chicago accent. I didn't sing it like Julie Andrews. Because, you know, there's only one Julie Andrews. So you might as well interpret it your own way. So... Ape in the house is a lonely goat herd. Lady, a lady, a lady. Ooh. That's right, folks. That's music. Anyhow, that was, after you've done 2 hours with a puppet on your hand, you've any shred of dignity is gone. And you're really, that's like just Doesn't even make a dent in the fool of myself sweepstakes.
it was just an absolutely incredible experience to get to witness that. It was
it was fun.
I'm so sorry that I missed it. It sounds like it was amazing. And I do want to go back to the Let's Make a Poop game show. Can you tell us a little bit about that for people like myself who were not in the audience and did not get to witness it live?
Let's Make a Poop is a game show that I've done as Triumph numerous times. I wanted it to be a podcast that I was all set to kind of do with Team Coco and Starburns Productions. I did one show in Brooklyn in, November of 2019. It went great. It was with Pete Davidson. The panelists were Pete Davidson, Lawrence O'Donnell from MSNBC, and Anthony Scaramucci, and who, oddly enough, had the funniest answers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
He did great. And Lawrence O'Donnell was afraid to say anything inappropriate.
Right.
And I thought it was going to be this great thing. And it's basically we're playing, you know, a version of Jeopardy. We have a big board and nonsensical categories. And you know, the idea is to guess a funny answer. So, you know, for an example, we have that sample question I gave at this show was, human beings are separated from this by only a single chromosome. And the correct answer was, what is Marjorie Taylor Greene? And Triumph says, we would have also accepted Jake and Logan Paul. So it's questions like that. And, you know, it's always better when the contestants are game to just take a crack at answering stuff. And these guys did pretty well, all three of them.
Yeah, they came out with some really funny answers. And
Al and Rob. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially.
Yeah.
And they both, there was one weird, crazy stretch where Rob had a really funny derogatory answer. And then the real punchline turned out to be about Rob. And then the very next question, Al came up with a really funny derogatory answer. And the question ended up, the correct answer ended up being a slam on Weird Al. I don't want to spoil them for people who watch tonight.
We don't want to spoil it.
Whenever.
Yeah, we. The entire special is available now on YouTube. youtube.com/TriumphTheInsultComicDogHQ. You can watch the entire special. I don't want to spoil too much, but there were some really great Weird Al style parodies. Do you want to tell us about those?
Okay, so when I did Sketchfest a couple of years ago in San Francisco, we wanted to do another version of Let's Make a Poop, and the pandemic closed it down. And then Weird Al and I actually did a video together that they ended up closing this pre-taped Sketchfest. They did one night for charity, and literally like 50 comedians submitted things. And Weird Al and I did a bit that was similar to some of what you saw in the live show, where I'm basically complimenting Weird Al on numerous song parodies that he's done that I love. But they're not really Weird Al song parodies. They're ones that I've made up that are, it's the most passive aggressive way to insult someone imaginable. You know, and I'll give an example of one because it's in the commercial that is on YouTube right now that I've been, so I already spent it. So
okay.
Might as well. Which is I'm telling Al, most of them are just really cheap ones about food. This one was about the song Landslide. It was a parody of the song Landslide. And Triumph is just, oh my God, it's such a beautiful parody. You know, it captures, it's funny, but it also captures the, you know, it's emotional. And Weird Al, if I may, let me just do a little bit. Landslide, yes. Well, I've been drinking Starbucks lattes and Chipotle's right next door. Mocha grande burrito picante, straight out my as they pour. And then I'm just pouring it on.
It's so beautiful, Al. How could you not take credit for this? It's beautiful. Here's, okay, let's get to the end. And if you see my reflection in the blue water bowl, well, the mudslide will turn it brown. Oh, the mudslide will turn it brown. Weird Al Yankovic, everyone. Weird.
And they get worse. Yeah, so we torment him all night long with...
Over a dozen songs from my count.
I don't know. It felt like... I'm sure it felt like 25 to Weird Al. And then at the end, it crescendos in a beautiful duet that I don't want to spoil at all. Because that's one of the highlights of the whole show.
Oh, it's incredible.
The very end.
Although I think a lot of people listening right now probably have already either seen this special when it aired the live stream.
Possible, yeah.
And I think a lot of them may be familiar with it from the 2021 pre-recorded version. But,
could be.
There's been enough time that let's let them be surprised and really enjoy the duet with Al at the end.
yeah, it was great. He's such a great guy. Such a great guy. My God.
So what is the conversation with Al to get him onto something like this where, you know, there's a chance for vulgarity, there's a chance for, you know, political leanings and things that he typically shies away from. What is that conversation like?
He's a comedian. He's a very smart comedian, has a great sense of humor, obviously. Has been a big Triumph fan for a long time, which was very nice to hear. So he immediately got this joke and loved it and was game to do it. And the only thing he didn't want to do was for him to do anything vulgar.
Right.
You know, he didn't want to, you know, I believe there was like one word in one of the songs that we talked about doing that I changed just because it's not his thing. Or maybe I took the line instead of him.
Okay.
Because it had a borderline, problematic word for him. Mm-hmm. But in terms of everything else, being around other people doing political humor, even he, if you watch the show, he does a few jokes that have a little bit of a, you know, he's mocking, he gets a couple of shots in at Rob Schneider.
Right.
That, you know, that definitely represented his politics on some level. And that was, you know, nothing too controversial. He's definitely on the side that most of the audience would have been on. And,
right.
You know, he stuck his neck out a little bit, but he's, you know, he mostly had no problem being in that environment and letting Triumph do anything. He certainly didn't have any desire to censor Triumph or anybody else on stage.
Right, right.
You know, he appreciates what we're doing and, you know, he was very, very kind and kept saying how grateful he was to have been asked, you know, and couldn't have been more reciprocal on my part. You know, I know how much bigger Al is than Triumph at this stage. And I'm sure a ton of the audience was thrilled to show up for Al, whether or not Triumph was there, which is fine with me. Because I knew that I would deliver a funny show and make them happy. But it was great that Al participated and, raised the level of the show in every way imaginable.
And it was even more jam-packed with, you know, you mentioned Dave Hill, but Michael Winslow, Tom Lennon, Amber Ruffin.
Yes.
There was a lot of really great surprises for those of
Michael
us
Winslow
in the audience.
Michael Winslow was our announcer. He announced once for me during the quarantine. And Amber Ruffin, you know, the other people were already there at Sketchfest, and David Owen, the gentleman who runs the whole Sketchfest, just asked them if they wanted to do little walk-ons, and they all went for it. Amber, Tom Lennon, and Dave Hill, who I've worked with before, as I've said, very funny musician.
He's the best.
And comedian, yeah, he's great. And he's so hilarious on Instagram and Threads, actually. Mm-hmm. Right now he's doing, he won't let go of this joke ever since Henry Kissinger died. He keeps posting reminiscences of his friendship with Henry Kissinger. As if they were best buds. And they're just these really intimate stories and of Henry Kissinger busting his balls in unlikely situations. Just great. Really funny guy.
He's the best.
Yeah. And, you know, Michael Winslow was there. It's the first time I did this thing in Brooklyn. My announcer was my friend Richard Washington, who was Black Wolf the Dragon Master. For anybody who ever saw Triumph go to the line at Star Wars, you know, it's probably the most well-known Triumph the Insult Comic Dog remote. And I met a guy there, this black kid who was dressed as a medieval wizard, and he had this gigantic white beard and a staff and a wizard's hat. But he also had, like, glasses with tape on them, and he was eating a McChicken. But he committed to this British accent for the whole thing, and he was incredibly articulate at the same time as being completely bonkers. And I just never forgot him, so I used him when Triumph did a comedy album called Come Poop With Me. I wrote a whole song about this guy, Black Wolf the Dragon Master. It's one of my favorite songs on the album. I wrote it with my friend Ray James. And then I kept using him for different things here and there. And because of that, I had to give him my phone number. And he's this incredibly strange guy. And originally I hesitated. Should I be doing this? And sure enough, he would call me like every 2 weeks. But I'm such a weirdo and a recluse myself. I get overwhelmed by the world and, you know, sensory overload. And I end up, like, never calling any of my friends. I just, you know, I'm just at home with my family and my wife and my work. And that's it. And I kind of shut down otherwise. And so Black Wolf, this guy Black Wolf, ended up being one of the people I spoke to the most. I just really enjoyed it. Because I couldn't help but enjoy it because he was just so committed to his character. But he had this double-edged, he had this odd combination of, I'm sorry to get so far off the Weird Al topic right now, but he had this, he would commit to this character of a medieval wizard, but he was obsessed with pop culture at the same time. So he would talk about show business and he would leave me messages, and I did one of them, I think, on stage, where he would leave messages like, "Greetings, fresh hound. Well, it appears that the Grammy Awards are about to lose their longtime producer, Pierre Cossette, who has regretfully announced that he is stepping down after 27 years at the helm. One can only wonder who might be able to fill his substantial shoes. We can only wait and see. More anon!" I would cherish these.
It's incredible.
I ended up saving them and sending them to friends. And unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago. Mm. And so at the end of this show, I pay tribute to him in a serious way, because he actually recorded this incredibly beautiful video on his own, which kind of encapsulates the beauty of being a weirdo and being an individual and following your imagination without feeling any kind of shame or self-consciousness. And you know, it's so easy for Triumph to make fun of, but he articulates it in such a beautiful way that I thought the audience in San Francisco, you know, a town that celebrates individuality, would appreciate it. So I did it at the end of the show, and I left it in this special as well.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it was such a touching video and such a touching moment for the audience. And it certainly mirrors a lot of the message from Weird Al's film, Weird the Al Yankovic Story, you know, in the, yeah. the speech at the end. So, yeah, very cool. That's really cool you included that.
Yeah. It was... It's touching, but it's also inspiring. So, I remember seeing it when he was alive. I discovered it like 7 years ago, and I put it on Twitter back then because I was so blown away by it. But it's a nice way to remember him. But I do miss him. It's a shame. I used him a lot, even when I did these Triumph specials on Hulu. I would I was covering the 2016 election, and in between the remote segments, I would have roundtable discussions with real pundits like Carl Bernstein and Alan Dershowitz and real reporters. And I would always insist on Black Wolf sitting in the roundtable too, and giving him equal say, treating him just as seriously.
I love that.
Yeah, it's all classic. And I, you know, he had no script. Some of the stuff he would utter was just amazing. He was quite a character.
Oh, I love
so,
that.
So, yeah. But Michael Winslow awesome. Did a great job as the announcer. He's got his own, you know, level of strangeness that I find endlessly amusing as well.
So. He was a perfect addition to the show. Now, I have a slight personal history in that when I was in college, I hosted a radio show, and I was granted blue carpet access to, I can't remember which year, of A Night of Too Many Stars. And I got to stand on the carpet, and I got to interview. They put me all the way at the end, so not many people wanted to talk to me. But I got to be on the carpet, and I got to see a couple people and say hi to some people briefly, and I saw you run by because you were running in, and I spoke to your parents a little bit, and they were very nice.
I was always way too busy for the red carpet. Those are high pressure shows where I'm like, I've got like multiple goals when I'm doing those charity events because they're for TV. So I'm like very concerned about the network being happy and liking it. You know, that's really important to me.
Well, I'd love if you can just briefly speak about A Night of Too Many Stars, because we would love to hear about Weird Al's involvement in 2015.
Oh, yeah. So Night of Too Many Stars is something that I started with my wife in 2003. We had a beautiful son, Daniel, who was diagnosed in 1999. With autism, and back then there was very, very little information coming from anyone in the autistic community. So really, everything was geared toward, there wasn't much of a movement toward acceptance at that stage. It was like way more progress had been made since like the 60s when this expert Bruno Bettelheim blamed autism on what he called refrigerator moms who didn't give enough love. It was horrible. At this point, at least people understood that this was physiological, and but autism acceptance was not a big part of the agenda for the people you would learn from. And Michelle and I, we noticed that all the charities were about finding a cure. Everything was finding a cure or, research into, genetic research, all about trying to identify the gene and then we can wipe it out and all that. And meanwhile, our son was actually very, he was very, severely affected. He was nonverbal for the most part. He had a lot of sensory issues that caused him to hit himself, you know, really serious stuff. And we had a tough time. We were just so scared for him. And all we wanted was figure out how to make him happy and ease his, ease his challenges. And so we decided that we would try to raise money for schools and for because we couldn't even get into a school that could help him. They were so few. Even though I had like showbiz, whatever cred, it didn't matter. There just weren't enough of these things. Nobody cared that I had a puppet. So, at one point we just decided we would be the charity that raises money for schools and programs and services. And, we enlisted, it all came from me realizing I saw other parents who were activists in different ways and it was inspiring. And I was like, well, I know all these funny people, they'll do something. And they all did. Sandler and Conan and Dana, those are my tightest friends. And then a lot of other people that I worked with also were willing to help. And John Stewart, of all the people, I didn't know him that well, but he was the most curious. And he really wanted to know what Michelle and I were faced with and Daniel's challenges and what we were doing. And so he volunteered on his own. He said, anytime you want me to host something, a school fundraiser, if you're trying to start a school. And so we did that. And then John volunteered to just be the host of this thing and he brought it to Comedy Central because NBC wasn't, we did it once for NBC and they weren't really keen on it. They just were like, if we keep doing it, other charities are going to ask. But John talked to, the people running Comedy Central at the time, Doug Herzog, Judy McGrath, MTV Networks. And they were really up for it. And we did many, many versions of it there. And Weird Al, this was already, I think, 2015. It was like our fourth or fifth one by then. And in 2012, we had had this beautiful autistic singer named Jody DiPiazza do a duet. She was on the other side of the spectrum from Daniel. She's, autistic, but also verbal and a musical prodigy. And she wanted to sing Firework. And so we got Katy Perry. Sarah Silverman got her for me. I know I'm making this story way too long. I'm sorry. But Sarah got her for me, and it was great. And then 3 years later, I decided I wanted to... I had two ideas for Weird Al. One was we had something called America Comes Together, where people who were kind of opposites, like one time we had Bill O'Reilly and Chris Matthews do a comedy bit together. Hmm. One time we had Stephen Colbert and a guy in a bear costume, because Stephen was famously, that was his one fear, the Colbert character was terrified of bears. But, and then one time we had Paula Deen and Butter. And but this on this particular time, I wanted to have John Bon Jovi and Weird Al. And I wanted Bon Jovi to sing something and that Weird Al would parody it right on the spot. But Bon Jovi didn't want to do that. And then I thought, well, I really want Weird Al to still come. So
yeah,
I was like, let's have Weird Al sing with Jody. And it'll be nice because it'll show that Jody's, we don't have to do an emotional one this time. Let's do one that has humor and see the other side of Jody.
Yeah.
And so they sang Yoda together and it was wonderful. And we also had a group of autistic kids who are in a musical program called Action Play, and they backed Jody and Al up. And it was, it was funny, but it was also emotional just because it was so sweet.
Yeah.
And
very touching. And, yeah, absolutely.
And inspiring. So it was a great moment. And I think Al had a fantastic time and he couldn't have been nicer once again. So, I think that was the first time I ever got to work with Al.
And was that the first time meeting him as well?
I don't remember because I'm old and feeble, but I'm pretty sure it was the first time I actually got to meet Al. I might have it wrong, but I'm pretty sure, unless he did the Conan show while I was there, but I don't remember that. So there you go.
When you reached out to Weird Al to be on the Night of Too Many Stars, what was his reaction to participating in that?
Oh, you can imagine a guy like Al, who's so kind and you know, good-hearted and conscientious. He was very, very eager to be a part of the show. He was familiar with the show. There had been, like I said, like four of them by that time. And, you know, all of which had all the great comedians. So, you know, it's fun on two levels. It's fun to participate in the cause, and it's fun to just be around really, really fun, hilarious people. I mean, we got everybody. Sandler, Will Ferrell, yeah. Borat. Everybody did that show. Steve Carell, Stephen Colbert, Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
You know, everybody from different corners of the comedy world. Movies, late night television, political humor. Everyone was doing it. Chris Rock did it multiple times.
That's so cool.
And the idea for Yoda, did that come from you, from Jody, or from Al, or somebody else?
I don't remember where that came from, but I will tell you that some of the song parodies that I did at Sketchfest originated when we were coming up with that idea for Weird Al and John Bon Jovi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A writer named Craig Rowan, who was my head writer at the time, was an enormous fan, the biggest. I mean, we're all fans of Weird Al, but he was the biggest. And he was so excited to meet Al, to write for him, and then he ended up doing Yoda. But then years later, when we did this bit, one of the particular song that Al did with me, which I don't want to give away right now, but Al actually had charted. And so he sent me, he sent me a copy of the charted music for it with the lyrics. And I told him to write, you know, include among the writers my friend Craig Rowan, because I wanted Craig to have this. And, you know, he's since framed it. It's like one of his most cherished possessions.
That is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go.
Now, I don't think we really have enough time to really dig into much of your career because you have done so many incredible things. But one thing that, you know, you've obviously been a fixture on SNL. You've been a fixture for a very long time.
Yeah.
Sketches, writing, and the TV Funhouse. And I know Weird Al is such a big fan of SNL. Do you know why that has never happened, that Al has never been on SNL? Is there some deep, dark secret in SNL lore?
That's a really good question. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that he doesn't want to have funny musical acts because the show is funny. Has he ever had a comedic musical act? He's never had.
Tenacious D's been on.
That's only because Jack Black hosted.
Okay.
I'm not sure that Saturday Night Live has ever booked as a musical guest Tenacious D, Flight of the Conchords. This is my point. I'm not sure they may have some, you know, rule in their heads that, like, we're not going to book funny musical acts. The musical act is meant to be relief from the comedy, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's the only explanation that I could come up with, that it wouldn't be personal against Weird Al as much as some sort of standard that they adhere to, that where they don't want the whole show to be comedy and they want the music to, you know, provide a different angle to the show. That's all I can tell you. Certainly I've never heard anything about anyone being blackballed like that.
Well, good.
yeah.
Since we're on SNL, I first became aware of you through the great animated comedy sketch, Ambiguously Gay Duo.
Right.
I'd love if you could talk a little bit about how that came to be.
Sure. Yeah, I was a sketch writer for SNL for many years, but it's very different. You know, as a sketch writer, you're kind of, people don't get credit for their own sketches, so you never really know. It's a little more, now that there's Twitter, a lot of times writers will get credited later on Twitter. But not necessarily. I don't know why they don't credit them on YouTube, to be honest with you. Like, every time there's a sketch and they put it on, you know, why not credit the writers? I would advocate that. But I understand why it's not done on SNL. And so you kind of are living in the shadows there, and that's fine. And then I got to do the Conan show for a couple of years, which was a blast. That was like our little playground of of where we could really do stuff that we could never get away with on SNL because it was just too stupid. And then I got a little burned out from that show, and I had the opportunity to start a show with Dana Carvey on ABC. And there's a whole Hulu documentary about it called Too Funny to Fail, which gives you a really good feel for
an amazing what documentary, happened. By the way.
Yeah, it's very well done. It's very well done. It has a lot of funny clips. And that's where, so my goal in producing that show was to make it feel as different as possible from Saturday Night Live. I really wanted the sketches to move quickly. I wanted them to be more presentational sketches as opposed to, you know, people in a living room. We didn't do those kind of sketches. We kept it almost entirely presentational, which was more in Dana's wheelhouse anyway. Always was on Saturday Night Live. And then one of the things I suggested was, let's do cartoons. Nobody's ever done that. I think they tried once on SNL with Tippy Turtle in 1984 or something. That's how big a nerd I am. But it was a very brief recurring character. I was like, why don't we come up with cartoons? And then my friend Dino Stamatopoulos, brilliant writer who I'd worked with at Conan, created Moral Oral later. He said, but he has a filthy mind, and he suggested, what if we do a Wallace and Gromit parody, but it's obvious that they're that it's bestiality. And I was like, I don't see how we can, like, even me, even though I was the guy who allowed, you know, Bill Clinton in the first sketch of the show to be suckling puppies and kittens with eight breasts. But somehow for this one, I drew the line. I knew this is not, we can't do that, Dino. But then almost instantly, I came up with this completely different idea. I said, well, what if it's superheroes and everybody's wondering if they're gay or not? And and the reason I thought of it also was because Batman, the Batman movies had gotten more and more homoerotic over with each sequel. And this was right after, I think, the George Clooney one, which was, you know, laden with
the nipples,
close-ups, loving close-ups of nipples and crotches, and which I didn't care about, other than the fact that, like, why do we give? Why is this such an, you know? Because Batman and Robin have long been suspected of being gay, going back to the 50s. There was a very famous book about comic books sending dangerous messages to children. And one of the implications was that Batman and Robin were gay. And so I just, and there was a lot of that in the 90s, a lot of open speculation and trying to shame people to come out, I remember, you know. So it wasn't just coming from the conservative hetero world. It was also coming from the gay advocacy world, where people were actually, they would put posters up of people like Jodie Foster shaming them in their own way, like, why haven't you come out? And in my mind, I just thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to just be obsessed with whether superheroes are gay? I mean, these people are literally saving the world, and people are still, like, they won't leave them alone. They're just obsessed on whether or not they're f***ing. And that just struck me as so funny. And the whole sketch is written around one shot, which is the first one we did, which is there's a moment when Ace and Gary are, like, struggling to, you know, they're tied up and they're trying to crawl out, and they get into this position where they're just kind of intertwined, and you see, oh, actually, no, there's another moment where they've just beaten up the bad guys, and then Ace just pats Gary on the back, on the butt. Well done, buddy, and whatever it is, friend of friends. Good job, friend of friends. And then there's this shot, and this is the shot that just cracked me up, because all the Filmation or whatever Hanna-Barbera superhero shows that I was parodying, you know, nobody ever did anything subtle. It was all just straightforward action and I'm angry and here I'm going to get you. And here was a shot of a bad guy and his two henchmen just frozen still, just eyeing each other, just giving each other side eye, like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And the whole sketch was written around that shot. That was the essence of the entire premise.
It's so great.
And it was a really satisfying moment. And then Ace says, "What's everybody looking at?" And they're immediately like, "Nothing!" Even though they're supposed to be in the middle of this confrontation.
Right.
Even at the height of the tension, the most tense moment, they're still unable to contain their curiosity about the sexuality of these two men. So yeah, that's one of my favorite ideas ever is that sketch because it was silly, but it also made a point that I don't think we've ever really gotten over still. I mean, it's you know, I couldn't do the sketch now the same way, obviously, because thank God people are not as obsessed over whether people are gay or not. But they have moved on to other versions of sexuality that they are obsessed with. You know? So
progress.
It seems like there'll always be something for people to pick at and speculate about and care about that shouldn't matter. You know, and on both sides, like everybody, there's also this, you know, as a result of this bigotry, there's like a heightened version of identification where, you know, people who have so much more, there's so many more aspects to us and our personalities than our sexuality, you know? And yet here we are still forcing people to have to define themselves one way or another because it's such a big deal to people and it shouldn't be, you know? Everybody should just be allowed to do whatever they want and leave it at that. But yeah. Here we are.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my long answer to that one. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
I want to mention the new film that just came out a few months ago.
Oh,
but I want to sneak in something because as a kid, I was such an obsessive fan of the movie Little Nicky. And you play Mr. Beefy in Little Nicky. Yes.
Mr. Beefy, yeah.
I probably have seen Little Nicky as many times as I've seen UHF. And that's a lot. I used to watch them like off and on as a kid when I would get home from
school.
It's
very interesting, that movie. I remember reading Little Nicky, the script, and I was like, wow, this is incredible. This is a new level for Adam and Tim Herlihy, who wrote it. So smart, so many clever jokes, this whole world they created. But when I read it, I thought Adam was just going to be like himself, you know, just the son of Satan. But I thought he was just going to be kind of himself and a little bit timid. But then I saw him. I remember seeing him in the dressing room. And he's in this whole getup as Nicky, which was very similar to a character he had played on Weekend Update, who talked like this and had a really strange voice. And I remember thinking, well, I know I love this character, but I think this movie could be a really big hit if it was just Adam playing Adam. That was just my opinion. I might be wrong, but like Adam had become so popular at that point. And he had this great personality that guys could relate to and women loved him because he was, you know, more masculine than most comedians, to be frank. You know, he had just sort of an innocent frat boy quality to him. But here he just chose to play this absurdly nerdy character. And I think that might've been why the movie wasn't a big hit. It wasn't as successful financially as but it is a really good movie. And Mr. Beefy is just an impression of Sandy Wernick that I had been doing for Adam. Sandy Wernick is Adam's manager, still is. He ended up doing a whole movie called Sandy Wexler, where he's basically doing this impression that I taught him. There's actually three or four movies where Adam does a voice that I taught him. And one of them is Leo, because in Leo, he's playing Bernie Brillstein. He's doing a voice that's not too different than his the guy who ran his management company, Bernie Brillstein, who talked like this and he had the voice like that. And he would, you know, and Sandy was like his guy under him. And are you fucking kidding me? Are you telling me there's no room for David Spade in Just Shoot Me? Sandy!
Of course there's room. It's going to be perfect. It's all set. We're using Spade.
Like, they would always push their own clients onto shows.
Right.
that other clients were on. Like, you know, like, for example, Henry Winkler, who ended up being great in The Waterboy, but not necessarily the first person Adam thought of. But
Henry Winkler. Man, he doesn't seem that much like a coach, buddy. I don't know. It's perfect. It's all. I already had him signed. He's great.
Anyway.
Hey, and Sandy Wexler, by the way, featuring a yes. Weird Al cameo.
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of cameos in that one. Yes, that's right. Weird Al's in there. Yeah. It's a funny movie.
So out now is Leo. It's a movie that you wrote, and it is fantastic. And it's on Netflix. Everyone can watch it.
Thank you. I'm so glad you liked it. It was like 4 years, 5 years almost of my life. So before it came out, I was like, this better be huge because I've given up. I've just been hiding, basically been hiding for 5 years doing this. It's not what I'm used to doing. Even movies that I would make with Adam would basically take a year from soup to nuts. This thing, animation, just is a whole other ballgame. But yeah, I was really psyched about the idea, and I ended up writing all the songs too, which was kind of exciting. You know, I've written songs before, but very different, you know, Underage Bichon and things like that. Christmas time for the Jews.
Yeah.
You know. But here I was writing songs for a kids movie, but it was a lot of fun. And yeah, I showed you something that I did recently where I just made a make-believe. Well, I actually did get a real, put up a real petition at moveon.org and pretended that Triumph was indignant that When It's Us, the closing song of the movie, didn't get nominated for an Oscar. And, you know, if you go on my Instagram, you'll see how that plays out. Triumph basically gets Judd Apatow and Mark Shaiman, the composer, and Conan all to make humiliating testimonials that look kind of like hostage videos, you know, trying to get people to sign this petition. And then we actually shot something and pretended that the song made the Oscars, and I think that's pretty funny too. Pretty funny video.
It's an incredible amount of effort and work put into something
incredibly stupid
that nobody has seen. It's like the Dana Carvey show all over again. It's like this absolutely incredible thing that more people need to see because it lives on your Instagram. So I really hope our audience, after they check out the brand new special, will head over to Instagram.com/TriumphICDHQ and watch that whole series with Conan O'Brien and the musical number, and it's just Joey Fatone makes an appearance. It's just
yes, it's somehow he said yes.
it's so much better than anything I've seen on Instagram. I mean, the fact that you produce this incredible thing in this series, this long running joke, is just fantastic. So I really hope our audience goes and checks that out. I hope they check out Leo on Netflix, and they most certainly have either already or will be very shortly checking out the brand new Let's Make a Poop special. youtube.com/TriumphTheInsultComicDogHQ can watch the entire special over and over again and again and see Weird Al on stage with Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. Robert, this has just been such a blast getting to talk to you.
My pleasure. Thank you. I enjoyed it as well. I did. Great meeting you again, and hope you like the special.
Thank you to the legendary Robert Smigel for joining us on this podcast. Be sure to check out the brand new special featuring Weird Al over at youtube.com/TriumphTheInsultComicDogHQ.
Whoa! I know what that sound means. We've got a message on the 347 Spatula Hotline, the official hotline of Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast.
All right, Intern Frank, let's hear that message.
Oh, my.
And this is Josh.
We're just hanging out, playing some Weird Al songs.
We're friends now.
Heck yeah. Thanks to the podcast. Hello.
Hi.
Okay, we'll say toodaloo now.
Bye.
Toodaloo. Bye.
Wait a minute. Was that Josh Pilch, animation director of the Amish sequence for Weird the Al Yankovic Story, but more importantly, past guest of Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast?
It absolutely was, but wait. Was that Claire Walsh as heard in Spatula Messages and as thanked on Dave and Ethan's 2008 Weird Al podcast?
Oh, it certainly was! Whoa! Total celebrities calling the Spatula Hotline!
We are so glad that our podcast is bringing so many Weird Al fans together.
It sounds like you guys had a great time. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing all that fun.
This episode is brought to you in part by Discover Darwin, promoting tourism in Darwin, Minnesota. Not only is historic Darwin, Minnesota a beautiful, it's also not easily accessible by air.
Warning! If you are thinking of flying to Darwin, Minnesota, please allow extra travel time, as there are no airports in Darwin, Minnesota.
The nearest major airport to Darwin, Minnesota is the St. Cloud Regional Airport, which is 47 miles away.
Attention, international travelers! You'll need to travel even further, as the closest international airport is the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, a whopping 69 miles away.
Nice. Anyway, if these distances are too far, may we suggest flying in by helicopter, as the Crossroads Heliport is only 39 miles away.
How convenient!
And if you plan to travel by hot air balloon, blimp, hang glider, rocket-powered jetpack, or paper airplane, we recommend calling ahead.
So visit Darwin, Minnesota on your next air transportation expedition. Discover Darwin, more than just the twine ball. And after you visit Darwin, Minnesota, be sure to attempt to visit www.discoverdarwin.biz.
Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast is brought to you absolutely free thanks to our incredible sponsors, Burrito Burrito, Wizard Burger, our very own Jackson Scoggins, and Discover Darwin. Our podcast is also supported by everyone else in our Patreon family, with special thanks to our very own close personal friend level Patreon supporters, Blair, Kenneth, Ajax, Javier, Scotto, Matt, Kev, Casey, Allison, Adriana, Gus and Alicia, Zach, Ron, Dana B, Zeb, UH Jeff, and also thanks to Casey and everyone else in our pretty stinking majestic Patreon family.
If you enjoy our triumphant Weird Al podcast, as lauded in the commentary track on the Weird the Al Yankovic Story Steelbook, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/2000inch. There are awesome benefits like getting your name on the podcast, your own private RSS feed, which gives you early access to each and every bonus episode, and the self-satisfaction of doing something important with your otherwise pitiful, meaningless existence.
And once you join, you'll be the very first to hear our bonus episodes the instant that they drop. And don't forget to check out our official merchandise shop over at shop.2000inch.com. All proceeds from purchases go directly towards supporting our fine podcast.
We love hearing from our listeners and other Weird Al fans, so be sure to join our Facebook community at group.2000inch.com and visit our Discord server for even more riveting Weird Al and Red Rum Tegudi related conversations. You can find both of them linked on our website, as well as information about past episodes and guests over at 2000inch.com or weirdalpodcast.com.
Keep up on new episodes, podcast news, and events by following at 2000inch on Facebook,
X, Threads, and Instagram. And be sure to subscribe everywhere you listen to podcasts so you do not miss a single episode. Not only does subscribing help the podcast, you will be upgraded to first class on your next flight. Plus, we also love it when we receive voicemail via our official, patent-pending, 27-hour-a-day podcast hotline. That number is 347-SPATULA, as seen in the Illustrated Al. Please give it a call or a text, and you might even hear your message in a future episode.
Thank you once again to our guest, Robert Smigel, for joining us this episode, and a special thanks to Dan Pasternak. We'd also like to thank Claire Walsh, Josh Pilch, Marnie Farlow, John Bermuda Schwartz, the Grammy Award-winning Jim Kimo West, and Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. And thank you once again to the Grammy Award-winning Jim Kimo West for our incredible podcast theme song. And thank you to the incredible Weird Al Yankovic, as this podcast probably would not exist without him. And a big thanks to all of you, our loyal listeners, subscribers, Patreon supporters and sponsors, and everyone else who makes our podcast possible.
Thank you, as always, for choosing Dave and Ethan's 2000 Inch Weird Al podcast. And until next time, remember to gill and chill, keep listening to Weird Al, and stay cheesy. You know what, Ethan? I'd like to go back to something you said earlier in the episode.
Yeah, of course, Dave. What's up?
You mentioned that you ate a poop sandwich?
That I did.
Did you know you were eating poop at the time?
Dave, it wasn't real poop. Well, not yet.
Well, that's a relief. So how would you rank the poop sandwich that you ate? Would you say it's the best sandwich you've ever eaten?
As far as sandwiches? Oh, definitely not the best. Not even the next best. It's nowhere near a solid number two.
Did we really just do a poop joke?
No, of course not. They stink.
That was Dave and Ethan's 2000 Inch Weird Al Podcast, episode 224 inch.
The best Weird Al podcast to poop on!
Yes, this is Triumph, the Insult Comic Dog, and you're listening to Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast. Seriously, a whole podcast about Weird Al? Aren't there more efficient ways to let everyone know you're incredible losers?